Well, I'm glad that you could, had the time out that we could do this interview. I've been looking for you.
All right.
I've been looking to do the interview with you. You actually have a pretty interesting, career, not only in film. You were in the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
Where you boxed.
Yeah, but somewhere that got all really misconstrued because most of my fighting was not done in the Coast Guard. Most of it was done out of the Coast Guard. Matter of fact, when I went in the Coast Guard and they knew that I was a fighter, I did have three or four fights in the Coast Guard, but nothing. They fixed up a really nice robe for me, and boxing trunks, and I mean, it really was a beautiful outfit. Unfortunately, they put on the back Brent, Brent Gilliam.
Oh,
and all the fights I had in the Coast Guard, I was Brent Gilliam. They wouldn't take the thing back and fix it. But I did have 217 fights over a, off and on career of 15 years fighting, and I had a great time doing it. And if it weren't for being a boxer, I would never have been an actor because I loved getting up in front of 10,000 people and having them all stand up and clap for me because I always felt they were all pulling for me, every last one of them.
Well, now you've won some Golden Gloves.
Yeah, I won more Golden Glove championships than anybody in the history of the sport anywhere.
Man.
That just means I did it longer than most. But when I fought, there was Golden Gloves had no age limit. You had to be 16 to fight in the open class, which means you could take on anybody, mm-hmm. anywhere. But there was no maximum limit. When I was 17, I was fighting guys in well into the 30s all the time. And back then, there were plenty of amateur champions, state champions or national champions that could really, really fight. Put them up against pros anywhere. Put them up against the professional champions, they can hold their own.
Wow.
It's not like that today, but that's the way it was back then.
Yeah.
I thought about turning pro a number of times over my career, but I just never did. My mother and father didn't like me fighting, and it was okay for me to go in there and take punches and win trophies, but to do it for money, they didn't like that. And if I had really wanted to, I could have done it, but I just, I was fighting an uphill battle with the family on those sort of things, and I just, it wasn't a fight. If I'd have wanted to do it, I'd have done it. I just didn't want to do it bad enough. Just after I was 21, back then you had to be 21 years old to be a fireman or policeman, and I had just turned 21 on October 4th. Of 1959, that will soon be 50 years ago, I became a fireman in Farmers Branch. Farmers Branch is a little old community sitting out in the country, and they had, at that time, they had 6 paid firemen, but it was starting to grow, so they, in 1959, they hired 10 more, and I was one of them, and I stayed there for almost 2 years. And my brother was a fireman in Highland Park, and they had an opening over there, so I left the Farmers Branch Fire Department, went to Highland Park, stayed there 8 years, and then they opened up the Dallas Fire Department to members who had fathers or brothers or cousins or uncles in the department. My father had been a fireman in Dallas for then about, 25 years. So they opened it up, and I was the first fireman they ever
Well, in 1973, a movie was shot here in Dallas called Paper Moon.
Yeah.
And you got involved in that. How'd you get involved in that movie?
I had never been in a grade school play, nothing. But like I've told a lot of people, if it weren't for being a boxer, I would never have been an actor. Because, like I say, I like getting up in front of people and performing, and that's what boxing was. It was performing because I was pretty good at it, and so it was just another step. I saw an article in the Dallas paper that said, somebody was coming to Dallas to audition people to be extras in a picture called Paper Moon. And I thought, gosh, that might be fun, because Ryan O'Neal was the star of the show, and mm-hmm. I thought I might get to see him. So I go down mm-hmm. and stood in line with 450 people, and I finally got in to see a casting director, and he liked me, and he asked me to come back in a couple of weeks, because they might like to give me a one-line speaking role. Well, I came back a couple of weeks, and I said the line was, make him say calf rope, Leroy. And Randy Quaid finally did that part in the picture. He was on screen for maybe 20 seconds,
mm-hmm.
but I got a big role. The director, producer, Peter Bogdanovich, asked me if I could do the part of Floyd the desk clerk, and I told him I could. I didn't even know who Floyd the desk clerk was.
Mm-hmm.
So he had me read for it, and it's a great part. A year and a half later, I liked 7 votes, getting an Academy Award nomination. Soon after I read for it, well, they called me and said, you got the part, and Peter Bogdanovich wants to take you to St. Joseph, Missouri in about 3 or 4 weeks to do your part. I said, well, do I get paid for it? They said, yeah, you're going to make scale. I said, I don't know scale from left field. They said, well, it's $482 for the week. Wow, are you kidding me? This is 1972, and I was making $12,000 a year at the fire department. That was a lot more than I'd make in a week. So I took my vacation, they hauled me off to St. Joseph, Missouri, and I had a great time, and learned that I liked what I was doing, and everybody else did too, and everybody told me I ought to head to Hollywood. But I didn't. I went right straight back to the fire department. And about 3 months later, I got a phone call from Mel Brooks, and whoever Mel Brooks was, he had to convince me who he was, what he was. So I agreed to go out and see him, and I went out and told him no and came back to Dallas. Richard Pryor called me and asked me to come back again because they had rewritten my part. I went back to see him again and turned him down because the money wasn't right. Then they called me again, and I go back, and we finally got together on money. They had what I thought was a ton of money. I mean, it was a lot of money. Well, it wasn't a lot of money. So shortly thereafter, I quit the fire department and went to Hollywood.
How was that working on Blazing Saddles?
I had no idea what I was doing, but I was doing it.
You also hold a record as the first person to ever pass gas in a film.
A lot of people say, he's among the very first to pass gas in a motion picture. Well, I'm not among the first. I am the first.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Mel back about the 1st of October, and he said what I have said all along. He said, I should have had you put in the Guinness Book of Records for that. I said, yes, you should have. I've thought that for years.
Well, just looking at the people you worked with, I mean, Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder and, of course, Sam Pickens.
It was great. And after I'd been out there 3 times to negotiate being in the picture, we finally agreed on everything. Well, I came back to Dallas, and about 2 weeks later, Mel calls me and says, well, we've decided to have all the cast come in. We got some coming from New York, one from Detroit, and you're coming in from Dallas. We're just going to sit around the conference table. We're going to read the entire script and laugh, and we'll have some lunch, and you can go back to Dallas. I said, oh, okay. I was not smart enough, privy enough to know that I should have said, hey, who's in the picture besides me? You know, mm-hmm. It never entered my mind. As soon as I got to Mel Brooks' office, well, I looked through a crack in the door, and there sat Madeline Kahn, mm-hmm. who I just worked with mm-hmm. in Paper Moon, and she told me that when we left the set, she says, you and I are going to work together again. I said, no, I'm going back to the fire department. Well, 4 months later, cut to it, and here we are doing it again, and I walk in the room, and Slim is already, he's sitting at the other end of the table, and then Mel was there. Then the rest of them started showing up. I didn't even recognize Gene Wilder. I knew who Gene Wilder was, but I sure recognized Harvey Korman. It was quite an eye-opener just to be around those people and then to have them influence my life the way they did.
How did your family feel about you, leaving Dallas and going to Hollywood?
Well, when I left the fire department, my father had just passed away. My mother had passed away a year before he did. So I had a brother and a sister. But when I said, "Hey, I'm quitting the fire department. I'm going straight to Hollywood."
Mm-hmm.
My sister was, I have to say, she would do anything for me. And that was okay. Whatever was going to make me happy was fine. My brother said, listen, let me sit you down and talk to you. And he tried to talk me out of it. Every fireman in Dallas tried to talk me out of it. They all thought I was nuts. I mean, here I was going to Hollywood, even though I was going to make $12,000 in 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it really turned out to be $25,000 in about 4.5 weeks of overtime. Oh, boy, this is good. But all of them knew more than I did. They knew that, you know, there are plenty of people that go out there and last a year and they're back home in Walla Walla, Washington, or some of them last 40 years and never do anything. And so I got, you know, all the negative stuff, but I don't know. Mel Brooks had just convinced me. Peter Bogdanovich, the director of Paper Moon, had convinced me while I was, you know, when I sought his advice. They just thought that I had a career, and I took them at their word, and I did it, and I made it happen, and it has been a career. It's been 36 years now. I started Blazing Saddles in 1973, so it's almost been 36 years. That's a long time. I have been lucky in that I've done a lot of big pictures, and they will always put me in scenes that really give a little jolt to the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And Back to the Future 3, I know that's the way it was. Honeymoon in Vegas,
Flying Elvises of the Utah
flying
chapter.
Flying Elvises, Utah chapter. And when the picture's over, the director will always say, man, I'm just sorry we didn't have you all the way through this picture. And because I know, I've learned, that I do bring a lot to the table. My kind of acting or my kind of humor comes straight out of me. It's not learned. It's not, I didn't go to school to acquire this stuff. It's just who I am and what I'm doing. And if that sells, along with my face, if my face sells, if my big smile sells, my part of the picture is going to be good.
How's it living here in the local area and you having a role and you may have to, you know, leave state? How does that work out?
Well, no, I did 23 years in Hollywood, and we've been back in the Dallas area 12 and a half years. It took me, like I say, I was there 23 years. It took me about 21 years to figure out how to get out of there. You know, I do a lot of commercials. I mean, a ton of commercials. I'll do a picture a year, but I work probably a third as much as I did when I was in California, but that's fine. because the longer you're in my business and the more work you do, the more pay you get. I mean, by the week, by the month, by the day, whatever.
Of course, when I told her when I was going to get interviewed with you, they're like, oh my God, it's the Rodeo Ford commercials.
Rodeo Ford, we don't care how you get here, folks. Just get here.
Yeah. Well, Bert, thanks a lot for doing the interview with you.
You're more than welcome.
You're really nice, and
my mom and dad would be glad to hear somebody say that. Thank you very much.